All right, let's call the meeting of the House Health and Social Services to order. It is 3:05 p.m. on February 20th, 2014. Present is Representative Tarr, Representative Keller, Representative Reinbold, and myself, Representative Higgins. And let the record reflect that I believe we do have a quorum. Now, our House Recording Secretary is Butch Carver. Our LIO moderator will be Sam Greeley. And our committee aide is Julie Morris. If anybody needs any help or needs any assistance, Julie, just raise your hand. She'll come see what you need. Also, for housekeeping, let's turn our cell phones off. The Duke affect our recording devices, from my understanding. And once again, my normal plea is if it goes off, you owe me a chocolate donut for the whole committee. So let's make sure they're off. Okay. Well, we'll begin. Today we have a bill in front of us, HB 301, which is an act relating to the duties and procedures of the state medical examiner. May I have a motion to bring HB 301 before the committee?
Mr. Chair, I move that we bring HB 301 version 28LS1196 Charlie C before the committee.
For discussion purposes.
For discussion.
Okay. Hearing no objections, HB 301 is before the committee for discussions. Representative Heron, would you please come forward with whoever you deem necessary to come with you and put your name on the record and we'll begin the process.
Good afternoon. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and to all committee members on the Health and Social Services Committee. Today, House Bill 301. And yes, sir, I definitely need staff to help me out, and she's done a good job on preparing this. I won't read the sponsor statement. I'll paraphrase it and throw in a little personal notes to it as well. And of course, each year around the state, you know, Alaskan families suffer an unexpected loss. And the accidental death is common, but each is critical, and most likely everybody in the room has had to deal with this grief, and it is real. So, I talked to Carrie Shelton with the department about the form that the family has to fill out. Now, if there is a death out there, accidental or otherwise, the examiner gets to choose whether to bring it in. But currently, it's because if it's in a remote site, they have others describe the death. And sometimes they send them in to Anchorage, and sometimes they do not. And what this change is that the state medical examiner to establish a cause of death and obtain the death certificate is required, of course, for legal burial. But what's happening is these people have suddenly lost someone, and they're expected to make decisions that could have a profound effect on them. And so working with Ms. Shelton, is that the form that the release of remains, the form did a couple of things. The first option was, after the examiner had looked at the body, is the first option that's on the form said you can send it to a funeral home and the body will be taken care of. And then the second option is that you can have the body returned to the family without being embalmed and not in an inexpensive casket. And so they have changed it. Now it is in the option where the family can decide to bring it home without embalming and without a casket. And on the prior form, the state was in a position of encouraging embalming and sending to a funeral home. So if me and my family are in a situation where one of our kids died, we're in grief. And a lot of people, it doesn't happen all the time to your family. And so you're stressing out over the death, and you're not worried about how the decisions are made in the release of the remains. And what has happened is they see this official form that is encouraging them to send to the funeral home and, of course, purchase a, to send to the funeral home. And sometimes that's not necessary. And so what this does is it creates a form that explains what this is, what this financial impact may be to you. And then we'd, in working with the local nonprofits in the Bethel region, I'm working with them to have a non-paid, I mean, no state funding, where there is a person they can go to who is a navigator. So if a family loses a member, they know to call this individual at this one location and advise them, give them advice how to deal with the medical examiner and, more importantly, the funeral home. What was what people in Bethel and around the state, rural areas, is it looked like they were required to send it to the funeral home. And that's not the case. And we didn't, and I feel we don't, the state shouldn't be in the business of making a personal decision on how to spend your money. And that's how it appeared to be. And so these are small changes in this proposed legislation. The fiscal note is real small. It's $5,000. But I asked Ms. Shelton, I says, why doesn't the ME enter the 21st century? We do telepsychiatry. We do telemedicine. And a doc and a, or a medical examiner can look at the victim and see if they should send it to Anchorage rather than getting an interpreted over the phone description from a state trooper. And the state likes that idea because you can cut down on the transportation costs. And in a lot of ways, that $5,000 expense might save us money, the state. Because if it has to go to ME, as is explained, is that the ME will pay for the freight cost in and the freight cost back, but none of the embalming, none of the caskets, et cetera. So I have Liz here for any questions that I don't fully or don't know fully how to explain, and she'll be there available. So thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Well, you went through a lot right there, and I was trying to follow you. Can you, and this is for my benefit, maybe everybody here understood, but kind of do like a bullet statement what exactly your bill is changing, because you said there's a lot of small changes. So kind of what are those small changes that we're talking about?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, and I was sort of giving you the 10,000 view of what the families go through, and I'd ask Liz for that to explain that.
Okay.
Thank you very much. Through the chair, my name is Elizabeth Clement, or Liz. I am proud staff to Representative Bob Herron.
Let me interrupt you real quick. Let me recognize that Representative Seaton has joined us. Thank you. Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If you look through the bill, you'll see in Section 1, the bill simply amends AS 1265-025A, subsection 2, to replace the word may with a shall. This is addressing an area of practice that the state ME's office currently does. We think it's a very good practice. In many cases, an accidental death, say it's a fishing accident, a snow machine mishap, may happen away from a person's home community. It could happen 30 miles downriver or in another place. When that deceased person's body is shipped into the medical examiner's office in Anchorage for the procedures that it needs to undergo, it must then be shipped back. Current law states that related transportation to the location where the postmortem exam is conducted and then to the community closest to where the death occurred will be covered by the ME's office except that transportation costs to another requested location may be paid to the extent the costs do not exceed the costs of shipping to the community that's closest to their location of death. Many times when the family lives 30 miles downriver in a different community, having them sent to the community where they died creates additional hardship for the family that is then responsible financially and physically for having them transported home.
Mr. Chairman, for the one of the examples that was sort of incredulous, but I think they worked it out, is 12 miles upriver is Queefluck, and that's where the victim died, whether it was a drowning or a motorcycle, a snow machine accident. But they lived 3 miles downriver from Bethel. And so instead of shipping it to Queefluck, where the person, the deceased, where they died, they saved my money by sending him home.
And this is something, following up on Representative Heron through the chair, that we understand that the medical examiner's office routinely does now. They simply are not required to by statute, but they do it to the extent that it doesn't cost the state any additional money. We would like to ensure that they continue that practice simply by changing the word may to the word shall, and adding words that would otherwise have been paid by the department, meaning that we're not going to add expenses to their plate. Any costs above and beyond costs the department would pay to ship a person's remains to the community closest to where they died will be picked up by the families as they are now. So we're not putting any further burden on the state. We're just ensuring that this good, humane practice that the department has adopted will be sure to continue when current managers are no longer there. Okay. Moving on.
Well, real quick here, Representative Keller wanted to do something.
If I could, yeah. And this is an interruption. Representative Heron, if you don't mind. I have with me today somebody from Dillingham who is a intern with CERC. Kendall, would you stand up? Put Close-Up has this program where they let interns come and they shadow you for a day. And Kendall Dre is from Dillingham, and I just wanted to introduce her. Usually our committees, Kendall, our topic is a little bit more lively. And so you can come back and visit us anytime. But I should have done that when you called the roll, Mr. Chair, but I know she has to go here in a little bit, so I interrupted for that. Thank you.
I'm sure the sponsor doesn't mind an interruption. Thank you, Kendall. I'm sorry. Go ahead. Continue.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Additionally, Section 1 makes a simple change to Subsection 3 of the same part of the law. Embalming, required by law, is the way current statute reads. Currently, embalming is not required by law in Alaska. It used to be until several years ago. It is no longer, and I know if you have any further questions about that, Director Carrie Shelton of the Division of Public Health will be your expert on there. Although embalming is not required by law, it is always possible that an air carrier or other transporting entity that is responsible for moving the remains of the deceased from the ME's office in Anchorage to their home communities may choose to require embalming in order to accept that person's body for shipping.
And so just a quick question on this particular issue here. So embalming required by law or by a policy of the transporting entity, what do we mean by that? I mean, by the transporting entity, you know, we're talking about ERA or one of the aircraft people, right?
ERA, Alaska Airlines.
And so if they required that, and I mean, I'm not sure why they would, but then would we be required to do the embalming then, I guess? Is that what this is saying?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. The state would then be financially responsible for the embalming, whether they chose to do it themselves or to contract it out.
And this is new language.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, that is correct.
And just as a follow-up, is this something that's been an issue in the past, or why are we putting this in here?
As far as I know, it's not been an issue.
It has not? But so why are we putting this language in the bill then?
I asked the same question. I guess it's just an extra pair of suspenders.
Okay. Okay. Representative Tarr, I think, had a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On the previous section, I just wanted to understand, because in preparing for the bill, we were looking at the fiscal notes, and the Senate fiscal note is different than the House, and I think we're going to talk a little bit about that. And what happens in that first section seems like the right practice, of course, to go to the home, the person's body would go to the home community for burial and for the family. But if that difference, $500, say, from where the person passed away to where their home community is something that the family can't afford, then is there a mechanism for the state to pay for it, or what would happen in a scenario like that?
Through the chair, Representative Tarr, is that I support the state's position that the transportation from the point of death is getting it to the ME, because the ME wants it to see the body. Mm-hmm. But it does make sense that they will pay to return it. What they're saying is they'll return it to the place of death. But if it costs less to return it to the home, I support that. But if it does cost more, I don't think that it's I think it's fair to expect the family to pay for that extra charge, because they might choose to have it not go to the home. They might choose it to send it to a cemetery, to a place where the cemetery would be quite a bit farther. Mm-hmm. So I think it's a fairness issue. Mm-hmm. We want to look at the body. We want to tell the family how the person died, and then get it back at a reasonable amount. Mm-hmm. And in the practice is that I've been witness to several bodies that have returned without a casket and without embalming. And people, that's their way of dealing and dealing with the issue of someone dying. So I think it's fair that whatever it costs to get them in, and they'll pay that same amount, but not more than it did to bring them in.
Mr. Chairman, just as a follow-up.
Go ahead.
Thank you. So we wouldn't envision a situation where perhaps then the body was delivered to the place of death, but the family had no way of getting the body home, I guess. That doesn't seem like an insurmountable cost.
Well, in all fairness, they do work with the families, and that's why a navigator in a regional hub would be invaluable to the state to help assist in that process.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you.
Go ahead, continue.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Moving into Section 2, Section 2 primarily gives the state the flexibility and the leeway to consider working with existing high-quality infrastructure that exists in rural regions of the state. The Alaska Tribal Health System has done a phenomenal job over the last years investing in telehealth and telemedicine equipment that allows them to do tremendous things via distance delivery. It would take some work, certainly, and this if this bill were to become law, it's not something that would automatically happen. But these changes here would allow the Department of Health and Social Services to work with members of the tribal health system to utilize some of their existing technology and resources in the region, so that perhaps not as many people's remains would need to be shipped all the way into Anchorage for in-person physical examination at the medical examiner's office. If a person's body could be shipped, for example, from Quitlick into Bethel, and then initially given a preliminary exam over the telemedicine technology, which has been proven as a viable means of healthcare delivery in many cases, that would save the family some stress, some time. It would save the state some time and some money, perhaps. Some of those cases would just be initial exams, and it would be determined by the medical's office, medical examiner's office, certainly, that they would need to continue on into Anchorage to be given a more thorough in-person physical exam. But some cases would not need that, in which case it could save the state a small amount of money. In addition, Section 2 outlines standards for fair and respectful written communication between the medical examiner's office and surviving family members as they are experiencing a loss. As Representative Herron mentioned, the forms, the physical written paper forms that the medical examiner's office uses have just very recently changed from a very confusing, less thorough form to one that does its job quite a bit better. And I know there's much appreciation around the state for the medical examiner's office's willingness to make those changes. While those are appreciated, we've decided to put into statute some basic outlines for what kind of information must be disclosed, how it must be done in a non-threatening and non-coercive manner as well, just for future safeguards. A new Section H as well in Section 2 adds another existing good current practice into statute. When a body must be transported by air, the department shall provide for temperature and other controls available to maintain the body. Currently, when a body will be shipped by air, it's standard practice for the medical examiner's office to freeze the body, knowing that air transport can take some time. And it's the best way they currently have of preserving that body, as harsh as it sounds, to keep it in a state where it can arrive home to receiving family members and community members in as a respectful a manner as possible.
Mr. Chairman, is that in talking with Carrie Shelton, the ME understands. This is just a humane practice. I mean, there's no question about this. And in my experience, living in Bethel for 41 years, is the air carriers do their, they try very hard to get the remains back. There's no question about that.
No, I would agree. I agree with it. My question though on H, that's new, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I was just curious why it wasn't blackened and highlighted. It looks like it was normal regulation.
Mr. Chairman, it is their normal practice.
Okay, thank you.
Could I ask a question?
Well, sure. Representative Keller?
Yeah. I just want to ask if it on page 2, lines 22 to 24, I think I fully, understand and commend, what you're doing here. It's not a problem. But is that clear to everybody? When I read that, I wonder if we couldn't, clarify a little bit. Because, it says when without a recommendation or stated preference to do otherwise. At first, I was kind of grappling with what the otherwise meant. Whether it went back to the release or went back to the, where it was released, where the remains were released to. And if it's clear, maybe that this question on the record is enough. If it's clear to the ME and all that, I just wanted to point that out, that it was a little fuzzy to me as I read it.
So, Mr. Chairman and Representative Keller, we came unprepared to share the new form with everyone, but I could ask staff to show it to you, and you can see that it is it's their choice. And the old form that I could repeat is that before they looked like they were in, it was almost like the state nearly required it to be sent to the funeral home. And they've changed it.
Yeah.
So option for the family to do it is, of course, in the form.
Again, Mr. Chair, I really thank you for doing that. I think it's these things sometimes are hard to do, and it's an important one. Mm-hmm. You don't want to add to the confusion, the pain, the turmoil, something like that, to end up with a bill that they didn't see coming. Just really adds to the pain, and this puts it out clearly.
Mr. Chairman, we're Representative Keller, we're not going to name names or anything, but I've been familiar with this is very rare, but people have accused of some of these important these companies are very important is that holding them hostage, so to speak. And so this is why my constituents have come to us and asked the legislature to make sure that there is a transparent process through a time of grief. Because if I was to lose one of my family members, I don't know if I could think straight for a couple of days.
Right.
So and it's important that the ME do their job. I mean, we're not saying we don't want them to do their job, but we want the family to make their decision and not force decisions on them.
And, and that brings me back to my question on page 2, line 3, on I'm not sure I feel comfortable with that line, because now you're taking the decision of embalming away from the family and into the transporting entity, because they could literally say, I want them embalmed, and not my feelings, who knows, I could say I don't want that to happen. And I guess that's kind of, I have a little bit of a heartache with that line. So, go ahead.
Mr. Chair, I wanted to ask the sponsor if you would think it would harm the bill if we eliminated the addition of words there in lines 3 and 4, page 2. Yeah, will that harm your bill?
From my perspective, it won't, but the department should comment on that.
Okay. Okay.
Mr. Chairman?
What line? Representative,
are we talking about?
Page 2, line 3, where it says embalming required by law or by a policy of the transporting entity. In other words, if the transport entity says, I'm not going to transport this body unless you embalm it, you've taken the authority away from the family members, which may not want embalming, for their loved ones. And that's where I have a little bit of a heartache with that. But we can still talk about that.
Thank you.
That's just where I'm at. Okay, let's continue on. Oh, well, sure. Representative Seaton.
Since we're on page 2, I'm trying to find out exactly what we've got here. On G, that's the notice that goes out to the family, basically. But on line 29, it says transportation to a location other than the location where the death occurred. And it seems like so it's no longer transportation to the community to a location where the death occurred? Or is that at the choice of the person that's getting the notice that they can have the transportation, they're being told that the body can either go back to that community where the death occurred or to another location, which is what I think it wants to say, but I think that this says that the notice to the family is the transportation will be to someplace else, and I don't think that that's was what was requested.
I'll let Liz respond, Mr. Chairman.
Through the chair, Representative Seaton, looking a little bit up the page at line 19, you'll read, the notice must explain in a form and language that is designed to be easy to understand the availability of transportation to another location. So I believe that is giving the family the choice, just letting them know that they may choose to have the body sent to a location other than the location of death, not telling them that it will be, but simply letting them know that it is available.
And Mr. Chair, I guess my question is, if we're giving notice to the family, do you want notice that we will send the body back to the location where the death occurred, or an additional location? But it seems like this almost indicates that it's going to be sent to a different location, and I thought that that might be confusing, and you might want to just consider the words, because I think that that's the intent.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Seaton, is maybe we should just ask drafting if it reads, is there a misunderstanding in the reading of it?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Go ahead. Let's continue.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Sections 3, 4, and 5 amend current AS 1850 simply to facilitate the declaration of death and issuance of a death certificate in region for cases in which transport to the medical examiner's office is deemed unnecessary. Part of the process when bodies are shipped into the medical examiner's office is establishing a legally recognized cause of death, which then allows a death certificate to be filed, issued, and shared with the family so that they may legally bury their loved one. If there are cases coming from passage of this bill in which bodies no longer need to be shipped into the medical examiner's office in Anchorage, they will still need to be issued a death certificate. So this simply provides the Department of Health and Social Services the flexibility to work with entities in each rural region to set up that infrastructure in which the cause of death can be determined within the region and that death certificate form issued there as well.
So, Mr. Chairman, in my opening statement, that is what, at least in the AVCP region, Bethel, is for 20 years they've had a navigator to assist families, and the state did not provide any of that funding. And so in talking to them, these regional hubs that have that provide social services in the region, they've been doing it, and they'd like to help the families to continue it. So this is, puts it in statute.
Moving forward, Section 6 adds to existing AS 1850-280 a new subsection E, again adding into statute another good humane practice currently undertaken by the ME's office, in which their staff obtain the burial transit permit, which is a legally required form and permit once again in order to physically move a dead body. Their office currently will provide this for families who choose to have remains shipped back to them or who choose to come to the medical examiner's office and transport their loved one themselves. This is just something we hope that will continue into the future when the people who make these current decisions are no longer making these decisions.
So, Mr. Chairman, in sort of a concluding remark, and it's not addressed anywhere here, but this is knowledge that I didn't even know, is say a family does agree to have the funeral home embalm, the family does choose to have to buy a casket. There's something that a lot of people don't know, that there is what they call a taxi fee from the ME to the funeral home, from the funeral home to the airport, if it is going to an airport. And it is a significant amount of money. So it's not only the embalming costs, not only the casket costs, but then there's this sort of hidden cost that very few people know about, and that's a taxi fee.
I noticed in page 3, line 21, this is the first time you guys have used the word fetus. A person acting as a funeral director who first assumes custody of a dead body or fetus, she'll obtain a burial transit permit. Should that be used, fetus, in other places in the bill, do you think? Because you just use body.
Mr. Chairman, it's my understanding that's conforming language.
Is it? Okay, I wasn't sure. Are there any other questions for the sponsor? Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. When we're modifying on page 2, the first lines there, that's, I guess, section A. Looking through the statute here, there's also a thing instead of paying the cost of services listed under A3, 4, and B of this section, the Department of Health Services may pay for the cremation or interment of the deceased if the person legally responsible requests or approves a cremation and interment. Are those provisions still going to be in law, or does this bill, rewriting that section and not having that section in there, does that eliminate that option? Maybe that's under C.
We do have the director of the state public health on the phone. Is that a question maybe we should ask them?
Yes, sir.
Is it Carrie Shelton? Are you on?
This is Carrie Shelton. I'm online.
Okay, and can you just put your name and your affiliation on record for us? I think we have a couple of questions for you.
Yes, sir. My name is Carrie Shelton. I'm the director of the Alaska Division of Public Health.
Did you hear that question from Representative Seaton?
Mr. Chairman, I believe Representative Seaton was asking about the burial assistance that's provided by the Department of Health and Social Services. Is that correct?
Go ahead and repeat your question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was looking at the statute, you know, 1265.025, and there's an option in there for cremation and internment, and I'm just wondering, I just wanted to make sure that as we're rewriting this, we're not changing that option, are we?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Seaton, no.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Okay. Going back and forth with some of the sections in here and some of them not, I just want to make sure that we're...
Carrie? That's Carrie, correct?
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Another question that we had, and maybe you can answer this, is on page 2, on line 3, it's got embalming required by law or by a policy of the transporting entity. If we were to move by a policy of the transporting entity, would that hurt this bill, or is that something that needs to be in? Do you give us your opinion on that?
Certainly, Mr. Chairman. You know, as Ms. Clement and Representative Herron both mentioned, there is not currently any policy that we're aware of any transporting entities that requires embalming. The medical examiner's office has routinely shipped bodies to all parts of the state using a variety of air carriers, and we have not ever come across a situation where one has required us to embalm a body prior to shipping it after the postmortem examination.
Okay. Well, maybe just a follow-up question.
No, go ahead.
On that.
Continue.
The weight of the body after it's embalmed, is it not lighter than if it wasn't?
No, sir. The embalming of the body does not affect the weight.
Okay. That was kind of in my mind here. I was thinking about that. For transporting cost. But if that's not a factor, then okay. Representative Keller?
Yeah. Thank you, Carrie. In your fiscal note, you point out the possibility of this getting expensive if the air carrier were to make this requirement. And you also pointed out the indeterminate costs related to the cosmetology. If I understood it right, if the body didn't get returned back to to a mortuary, and then the also, what was the other indeterminate cost that you pointed out there, a potential one? And I guess the reason I'm pointing them out is that do you have any opinion on whether we put sideboards on that, or do you have any suggestions to help us do that so we don't make a situation where the budget costs will just go up and we will have inadvertently done it? Wondered if you could guide us on that a little bit. Oh, the temperature control, that was the third one. If by suggesting that without the parameters on what it is, I mean, we understand what's going on now. Now they don't the carrier doesn't require the embalming, and now they use freezing. But, do we want to leave this open-ended? I think that's the policy the committee has to make, and I was wondering if you could give us some guidance on it.
Yes, sir, through the chair. There are some indeterminate costs and some circumstantial information in the fiscal note that you mentioned. The embalming, for starters, as we mentioned, there's not currently any policies of transporting entities to require embalming. However, if the bill passed with that language in it and one or all of the transporting entities did decide to implement such a policy, then the state would be required to pay for that. The state does not have the ability within our office to do embalming. We would contract that out with the local funeral home. The cost is, on average, about $1,000 per body to do embalming. And not only would that add to the cost for the state, but it would also add to the time that it would take to return the body back to the family, because the body would have to be sent to a local funeral home, the embalming done on their schedule as they can, and then return from there. So there would be a time and a cost involved with that. As far as the temperature controls, Ms. Clement did mention that the State Medical Examiner's Office does have a current policy and procedure in effect that if a body is badly decomposed and there are certain odors that go along with the body in that condition, they will freeze the body prior to transit to try to reduce some of that discomfort from the aircraft and when it arrives on scene. But we do not have the ability to maintain that body temperature, nor do we have the ability to control the temperature in the airline's facility or the aircraft itself. So, we freeze it on site at the medical examiner's office, but, depending on how long it takes to transport and what the conditions are in the airline and the airline's facilities, we just have no way of controlling that and don't know what those costs would be to implement something, because we truly don't know how that would happen. And then as far as the rural exams go, we mentioned that in the fiscal note as well. We understand that there is very good technology, and the rural communities, especially in the tribal health system, have made excellent use of their telemedicine equipment for a variety of reasons. But for this purpose, there would be a requirement for more than just the telemedicine equipment. Any location that would be doing a medical legal forensic investigation examination would have to have certain infrastructure in place as well. Things in place in the room, such as floor drains, exam tables, proper radiology, storage, specimen collection abilities, body scale, body washing, just a variety of items, equipment, and infrastructure that they would need in order to do a proper examination and provide the same level of care, the same standard of investigation that we would provide here at the Anchorage facility, as well as have an HD camera. I'm not sure what type of equipment is out there right now in the telemedicine, but it would need to be an HD camera that would be manipulatable so that they could move it around the body and really provide an accurate picture to the forensic pathologist back here in Anchorage. So that would be a cost to the facility or to the community, whoever is providing that on the book. And then, of course, the medical examiner's office would need to purchase telemedicine equipment on this end so that we would be able to to view what was happening out there at the local inn, and we do not currently have such equipment in our office right now. Did that address the financial issues that you were asking about, sir?
Yes, thank you.
Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead.
The telemedicine, telepsychiatry, that equipment is proven. I think that what is in many cases were is that the trooper on site who has to describe to the ME possible cause of death. You know, in our region, sure you have telemedicine carts in every clinic. But the ideal situation would be to transport the body to the regional hub, Bethel, Yukon-Kuskokwim Hospital, where a doctor, at least a PA, could utilize this equipment and talk to the ME and not solely depend on Alaska State Trooper to describe the injuries that caused the death. And so we think there can be some savings to the state, and it is a what the officer might explain could be different to way that a doc talks to the ME at the regional hub. And so we just think it again lets technology decrease all these costs and these times in dealing with a horrible situation. And so I agree with Carrie, though. That we have to have the right equipment in place. And I think that if they were to buy the machine and have it in theirs, they could interface successfully in every major hub in the state.
Representative Seaton, you had a question?
Are you through with this particular one?
Yeah.
Thank you. I was wondering, you know, if embalming is not required by law, I'm wondering why we have that section in there at all. Should we just remove the section where it's required by law? If it turns out that someone comes along and puts a statute in requiring embalming, it would be at that point in time that we would need it. But if the medical examiner is not aware of any law at all, should we remove the section, and does that fit the sponsor's purpose?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Seaton, you know, I think that that is more of a technical question that I would seek advice upon from others.
Okay. That's a question.
And Carrie, one last question, at least for me, going back to this page 3H. When a body must be transported by air, the department shall provide for temperature and other controls available to maintain the body. So if this bill were to leave the committee with that language, would the state have to provide some sort of climate-controlled coffins or whatever we're doing now?
Mr. Chairman, that's an excellent question, and the way the bill currently reads, it does say that we would provide for temperature and other controls. Again, we honestly don't know how to temperature controls for our body during transit, other than, you know, the current practice of freezing them. That's something we would have to investigate, and I honestly would not be able to tell you right now what the possible cost would be of that, because it's really not a standard practice, and something we'd have to try to figure out how to do.
Okay, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I've read this, and we've talked about this, but the testimony from Ms. Shelton is those the department doesn't have those controls available now, but when they do become available, it would be humane to use them. But she's testified that they don't have those tools available.
And I would agree. I mean, that's the point. I mean, we're not saying it's not humane or we shouldn't do it. I think the question boils down to is you know, what's the cost for us to do this? Because right now, you know, if I think from my understanding, the practice is to freeze the body to transport it. And I don't know if that's working well enough for us right now or not, or should we put this in there? You know, would this benefit us or would this hurt us in the long run?
Yes, sir.
I guess that's where I'm kind of sitting at.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I believe there are people to testify that are familiar with it, what the how this worked over these many years.
Right. Yeah, Representative Keller?
Yeah. thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Herron, there's three things here that we're committing to that the state has no response or no control. I mean, in other words, when it talks about the temperature control, the language used is shall provide for temperature and other controls available to maintain the body. There's nobody, we don't set the standards for what those controls are. So somebody out there, unnamed, can make that decision. It's the same thing with the transporting entity. You know, I mean, we have no control over what they're going to do on the embalming question. And the third thing is that if the cosmetology is done locally, that is something that they pointed out also, that they don't have any control, that price would be set by the entity. I frankly, on the record, I want to co-sponsor, but I would like to hear from maybe the drafter to help us identify some of those things if we can, but I want to understand from you if you have reason, you know, to leave it that way, that you would like to leave it open-ended or what, you know, on that.
I don't think it's necessary personally, but I want this to be a conversation by many people about what's the right thing to do.
Right. And
follow up.
And who would you recommend that we had to get in that conversation? Because I'm groping in my mind.
But Mr. Chairman, Representative Keller, that's why I want there to be inclusion, is because others will be able to tell us historically, has it been a problem? I don't think it has been. And there's the reality of it is that if a family chooses to at least embalm, I mean, that they know they have to pay that. I think what the effort on this is, the enabling legislation is important, but working with Ms. Shelton, who's been outstanding, is that we've gotten away from where it looks like the state is dictating the family's decision. And if you're in distress and you see this form and you just want to get the body back as soon as possible, and you check this box that says it goes to a funeral home and gets embalmed, and that's it. And what, again, for my opening statement, that's what appeared the state was doing, was pushing bodies to the funeral home without giving them options. And then on the second page is explaining what they can do. And so I think that, I don't want to solely focus on bodies that were not embalmed, were at least chilled and at least cleaned up, is maybe the family wants to do it that way. I want others to weigh in on this, because it really is a request from many people that had to deal with this. And the ME, I've had constituents who have gone to the ME, and they've asked these questions. And then I've worked with Ms. Shelton. So this is really just the first blush. And I think the more we talk about it, the better the bill will become.
I would agree. Good. Follow up.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I just want to point out for the record that I think this is a sole committee of referral. So, you know,
fifth floor. I get to visit the fifth floor.
Oh. Okay.
I'd love it to be, Mr. Chairman, I'd love it to have not a fiscal note, but that's not practical.
Right.
No, it really isn't.
Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On page three on H, it's got the condition, when a body must be transported by air. Is air the only method of transportation that the ME uses at any time where there would be, I'm just trying to find out whether that's the only way the bodies are ever transported.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Seaton, it's the quickest, and that's usually what the family wants. For you know, the road system, you know, sure, it could be delivered that way. The family can go drive to it, but my constituents in Western Alaska, it's the only way, literally.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. If there's no other questions for Carrie, we appreciate your help, and we'll probably be getting back with you. But at this time, if there's nothing else from the sponsor, we'll go to public testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
If that's okay. So we're going to open HB 301 to public testimony at this time. We'll try to limit our time to at least 2 minutes of testimony. We'll go to the lines first. Is it Rebel Whitcomb from Dillingham? Are you there?
Yes, this is Rebel Whitcomb from Dillingham. I'm the director of the Workforce Development Center. I'm testifying today, and thank you, Mr. Chair, through the committee, to the committee. BDNA actually offers burial assistance, and we work directly with the state and with many families in the grieving process here. Just a couple things after listening to the testimony today. Pulling up Chapter 1265, Death Investigations and Medical Examiners, there is a section that does say it on there that embalming required by law. So it's Section 1265.025, Postmortem Examinations. It's number 3. So it is currently in the statutes. That's the current one we just pulled up on the state's website. So it is in there. The second part, the thing that I'd like to relate to is we receive an average somewhere between 30 and 40 requests for services for our tribal community members. Not only that, we're a resource for non-natives that come to us. The costs have increased dramatically for family and state, and we understand that the individuals have no resources will go through Department of Health and Human Services. The ability for a funeral home to kind of leverage their services by asking for transportation costs is currently at $500 one way from the medical examiner's office to the funeral home. If the state does not incur that cost or pick it up, then it's actually fall back onto the family or to the tribes that are offering very limited tribal assistance for burials. We currently cap our services here in Dillingham at $2,500. We search out all other sources first. The way our burial assistance program works, we have to pay it financially up front. If we go over our estimated annual amounts, then we get that back basically 2 years later from the federal government. Embalming has certainly cultural and religious concerns. The containers that are used to put a person that's embalmed require other special handling. Air trays that air transportation agencies charge are $500 for the cardboard box that gets wrapped around the container or the body that's placed inside there in a bag. If they're referred to a funeral home, the funeral home will charge restoration after traumatic injuries. Typically that's about $400. Dressing, casketing, and cosmetology is another $300. So these costs are rapidly increasing. What happens frequently is that the family will deal with the trooper involved, with a police officer that's involved, and, you know, the body is taken from the community. Then we deal with the medical examiner's office, who has stated to us many times that the body needs to basically be going to a funeral home or a designee in there that can take care of it. Well, 99% of our families are from the rural communities. They don't have anybody in the urban centers, in Anchorage with the medical examiners. So we are at limitations. What happens then is that I hear your discussion stating that the medical examiners may wash the body. Every time that we've dealt with them, they say they know they will not wash the body. And some of the deaths are traumatic, but some of them are very, very, you know, a lot easier on the family and the, you know, the viewing of that. So we are obligated to use those services. Between the medical examiner's office and the Health and Human Services, it's always a struggle between who's paying for what costs. The cost of embalming does run up additional charges, and that's a real key consideration. Many of the families that don't understand what embalming is, and so the likelihood of a funeral home, which is a for-profit making company, increases. They're looking at their, they offer a very fine service, and I'm not trying to get away with that, but they're there to make money. So then they offer these other services that, you know, 3 hours of visitation, that's at $300, and every hour increment after that is another expense. And then they tack on these other wonderful things that are certainly, during a person's time of grieving, they're not thinking about those total costs. I've had instances where we've had the embalming of, you know, an individual and going out to the community, and somebody wonders what the embalming fluid is going to do to their cemetery sites. Traditional use in a community is not by having embalming. A person is placed in a nice homemade casket and put into the ground. What does that have the effect of the hazards for the unprotected lands? Many of the cemeteries are in tidal waters where there's floods, there's erosions of banks. We need to think about that. There is the toxicity of certainly those chemicals. But now I want to speak on behalf of my own personal piece. I've had some deaths, unfortunately, recently in my history. And I hear you talk about that the airlines do not require embalming. I can contradict that. Personally, it happened a year and a half ago to myself when my husband passed away. We tried to get him outside of Dillingham, and they required him to be embalmed. And we struggled for, you know, a day and a half trying to get him onto an airline. Between Alaska Airlines and then Peninsula Airways, it was outrageous. So you come from a small rural community and try to get in there to get some services. The airlines are under the belief that it's a requirement by the state, and so that education needs to be cleared up. The second part of it is I had unfortunately a brother that passed away. Very traumatic death, gunshot wound to the head. He was sent into the ME's office. He was processed there. Of course, we wanted him returned right at home. They said no, because he wasn't cleaned up. They refused to clean him up. He was brought to a funeral home who basically said then we had to have embalming done. So we waited basically because of the transportation issues. So he was removed from Dillingham, sent into Anchorage. It was a Tuesday when it happened. The following Thursday is when, because of backlogs in the ME's office, the following Thursday was the release to the funeral home. So they took their time because they're backed up. So the following Monday is when they started doing the embalming process, which took 2 days. So then we asked to bring him home. Well, then we're filling out the death certificate and discussions with the police officers and stuff here, and I called the ME's office, and they said, well, why did you have him embalmed? There's no way to plug the holes, basically. It's a sad thing to say, but, you know, so an unnecessary procedure. That embalming cost the family just under $1,000, $900-something, plus the cost of the dressing, plus these other costs that we didn't have to incur. So these things do happen, and they happen more readily than you think. Until it's your time of need, and tribal agencies are always trying to walk families through these scenarios, the funeral homes do a fabulous job. They help people in their emotional time and need. But tribal communities can do as well, and certainly should be used as a resource in talking about that. We understand that funding is an issue, but we've had very extreme circumstances, and it was actually in my brother's case, and I stepped forward and certainly paid the bill at the funeral home, where basically they said, we're not releasing his body until the bill is paid. And that is far unjust. You have people that are grieving, and it's already 2.5 weeks actually almost 3 weeks by the time we got him into Dillingham. So those things do happen, and it happens more frequently than we think. The other part that I actually wanted to mention here was, and I'm not sure if there's a relationship between the Code of Criminal Procedures and the Alaska statutes, but it also lists the embalming required by the state. So if the police officers are using their codes and looking at the statutes, those things need to correlate together. tribal communities do help individuals walk through the death certificate process, but I think having a better outline procedure, and in the statutes, changing from funeral home director or person acting as a funeral home director, I would never hate to consider myself as a funeral home director as we process the service. We're a tribal agency or a tribal designee assisting us in that process. There was some talk about the cost of the transports to and from the communities. When a person is embalmed, there has been weight changes, and those weight changes are required to be paid up front, of course, before anything is released by, of course, the airlines or the funeral home. And every time that we get those weights, when we say that there's no change in body weight, it makes me question that, because we've always paid some additional charges. And how things are being weighed, I don't know. But if a person weighs 190 pounds that goes in there, it's about 220 pounds when they get out. So that is an incurred cost. Restoration, many of our folks that we don't know that there's a need for the restoration after a traumatic injury. If there was more communication from the ME's office to the tribal community or to the family to say that it's not required for this restoration, that's a $400 charge that either the state's paying or the tribal agency or the family's paying. So some of these things need to be a little bit better visited for individuals that help those services. And I do want to take the time to say thank you for listening to this bill. It's very important. I think it needs some further discussion. But I would hate to have that you remove the piece about embalming without considering the other effects in the guidance of police officers and maybe in their protocol.
Okay. Any questions? Representative Seaton?
Thank you. And I find the designation of embalming required by law, and the testimony has been there hasn't been any. Can you direct me to where I'll find the police or the state trooper policies that are contradictory to that, or maybe a misunderstanding?
It says Code of Criminal Procedure is where I was looking at, and it follows with the Chapter 1265 death investigations. So it is the Alaska statutes. Chapter 65, Death Investigations and Medical Examiners, and it's 1265, section, I'm trying to find it here quickly.
If you're referring to 025, where it, 3, where it says embalming required by law, and
yes.
Is that the section you're referring to?
Yes.
Okay, and
so I heard the ME state that it's not required by law, but yet the statutes still show it.
Right, and so your preference is if it's not required by law that we should remove required by law from there so there's no confusion with the troopers? Is that what you're...
Well, there's no confusion between the troopers, the family, the airlines, all of those guys. Because that's what we come across with as we transport bodies back. They will say, nope, we're not going to transport them. Are they embalmed? We've had circumstances where we've got them through. Another agent will be there and put them through and recognize that. But we have held, I mean, we've had instances where they have been blocked from transporting back. You know, we are very fortunate in Dillingham to have large commercial airlines, I mean, a commercial freight company, so we use Everett Air Cargo, Northern Air Cargo, who have freeze capabilities at their sites in Anchorage and including typically in their rural hubs of some sort. So that, you know, paying to keep temperature controlled is a little better. We try to stay away from the, you know, use of smaller airlines, but of course our small villages, we have to do that. We have paid for transportation by boats upriver, downriver, frequently. We've actually had one that actually went by snow machine because the weather was so bad that the family wanted to get them out there by snow machine. So we do use other modes of transportation.
Thank you.
Thank you. We appreciate your testimony, and we'll probably be getting back with you. Thank you. Jackie Russell, are you on from Dellingham?
Yes, I am. Hi, Mr. Chairman Higginson and all the other representatives. My name's Jackie Russell, and I'm a social worker for BBAHC, Connecticut Hospital, and I'm calling from Dellingham, too. I represent myself as a professional working with 33 villages within Bristol Bay Area, and I am for House Bill 301 because it would impact the families I serve in a positive way. I believe after reading it and after learning by coming here, I am so thankful that Ray Bell was here to testify. She's the expert. She knows. She deals with our villages. Families come into Connecticut Hospital to receive end-of-life care, and when death occurs, most of the times families call BBNA for burial benefits and their village tribal councils to help them pay for the caskets, the travel, and burial, and other added costs that Ray Bell included. Sounds like so many other costs in a lot of cases. Our families are needy, and that's why they receive that help that is offered, and they receive it gracefully. I haven't seen any bodies embalmed yet. I haven't heard of any. I think that it really is unusual, and that most of the time they want to keep it a traditional way. For many families, not embalming is traditional, I've learned. Yesterday I heard the medical examiner representative say they needed to do work themselves, that cooperating with other professionals without licenses or forensic certifications and equipment or capabilities could place them in a liable position. And we sure would want to do that. I think the point I was thinking we could do is help. It sounds like it would be a big added cost to offer telecommunications or telemedicine help. That is something to consider, something for the state to consider. If there is anything that we could be done, though, I'm sure the hospital, with all of its great doctors and clinical workers, would love to lend a hand to cooperate with ME. I don't think we want to come across as someone who would do something that wasn't unprofessional, but we really would like to lend a helping hand there. To sum up, to make it short, having to go against family cultural beliefs or adding more costs to their hard times is something that we don't want to do. This is why I am for House Bill 301, just for those two simple reasons. No cost, no added cost, and to keep the culture. Thank you for hearing me.
Thank you.
Any questions?
Thank you for your time. Do we have a Nicholas, is it Hoover from Bethel?
Yes, Nicholas Hoover.
Hoover.
Could you press the button? Good afternoon, Chairman Higgins and committee members. Yep, this is Nicholas Hoover. I'm the Director for Social Services for the Association of Village Council Presidents. My testimony is presented on behalf of AVCP. Thank you for the honor and privilege to be here. We are in favor of House Bill 301. Much like the folks at Dillingham, we are, you know, pretty secluded out here in Bethel. We represent 56 federally recognized Indian tribes in the YK Delta. None of our villages are connected by road to each other or to the rest of Alaska. We live in an area with the highest unemployment rate and lowest per capita income in the state. We do provide social services to over 38 households annually for our tribes. Our villages are scattered around the region about the size of the state of Oregon. One of the services we provide is the burial assistance program, which is under the BIA welfare assistance program, and it comes in the form of monetary contribution toward the deceased's burial expenses, which includes direct payments to funeral homes when they refuse to release the body before payment can be made. We are continually contacted every year by tribal members who complain about the state process that they must navigate through when a loved one passes away. First, the issuance of a death certificate or the declaration of death must sometimes wait for someone qualified to request it or to authorize it. Secondly, they are told they must wait for must wait to start their bereavement process because their loved one must be transported to Anchorage for an autopsy. When this happens, families are not usually aware of the available funeral home services that they can get from different companies in Anchorage. So they end up usually using one of the most expensive funeral homes. And, you know, it's just a lot of incurred costs, costs like that they weren't aware they needed. More importantly, these families who qualify for welfare assistance have no other resources, no other available resources to cover the costs at the facilities that do not provide reduced legacy services for Alaskan Natives. In addition, when the family contacts the funeral home, they are told the funeral home will not release the remains back to the medical examiner's office until payment is made in full. Basically, like it was said before, holding the deceased remains hostage. In situations where the body has been transported back to the state has told the family that it is only responsible for paying the transportation costs of the weight of the remains when it was originally transported to Anchorage. In other words, the added weight caused by the embalming process or the casket and any other funeral home services are paid for either by the family, the tribe, or AVCP. In tight budget times, no one has the extra funds to cover these costs. So funds that are supposed to be dedicated to memorial services or funerals are spent on transportation of remains from Anchorage. In 2010, AVCP, after countless complaints from our tribes, tried to reach out to the medical examiner's office several times. We wanted to set up a meeting to find out a way to resolve some of these issues, but our calls were not returned. At AVCP's annual convention in October 2010, this issue was raised again, and we had to report to our tribes that we had no success in having any discussion with the medical examiner's office. At that convention, the tribes passed a resolution declaring the current system a problem for rural Alaskan Natives and made it a priority. After the convention, and also in 2011, we again tried contacting the medical examiner's office, but our calls were still not returned. So I'm sorry to say that I have fielded too many calls to count from grieving families complaining about the current system. They must deal not only with their loss, but unexpected costs they cannot afford. Their grief in these situations are indescribable. This has been happening in our region far too long. AVCP fully supports House Bill 301. We believe it will provide a much-needed fix and reduce the unnecessary stress placed upon our grieving families. Thank you.
Thank you. We appreciate your testimony. That's all we have online. I believe we have, is it Marcy Davis? Come and put your name on the record for us.
Thank you, Chairman Higgins. My name is Marcia Davis, and I'm General Counsel and Senior Vice President for Calista Corporation. We want to thank this committee for taking this bill up. We greatly appreciate Representative Herron and Senator Olson's willingness to come forward with this bill at this time. I'm going to just sort of step back and look at the big picture. You asked about the drafter. I've been very involved with the representative's office in coming up with the language. I personally interviewed an individual at the ME's office. Finally, as people indicated, it was difficult getting responses because they're a very busy agency, and it's difficult for them to break from what they're doing to deal with the policy issues. However, I was able to sort of get a rundown of exactly what was going on. And what we have here is an opportunity to lower the overall transactional costs of these deaths. And what was very clearly happening was that once an individual had the accidental death or you had the suicide, it set in motion a chain of events. The chain of events was that body, by necessity, almost always went to the Anchorage ME's office. There was a discussion with the local law enforcement people to see if there was a way to winnow it out, but invariably most of the cases all came to Anchorage. There at that time, the ME had no predilection to talk to any medical staff or use any of the medical facilities that were there. It was just law enforcement, boom, let's bring it in. And to be fair to the ME's office, I think their goal or mission is to make sure that there is not some instance where there's been a crime committed that has gone, you know, undetected. And their belief is that rural Alaska deserves the same level of justice as urban Alaska. And so, you know, that's a mission. And they're very much aligned along sort of a law enforcement mission. You'll hear them speak in terms of making sure that the evidence that's acquired during autopsies has evidentiary status, is provable in court, needs to stand the rigor. However, unfortunately, in rural Alaska, we're not Miami. We're not a high-tech, fancy place. And so, you know, I would probably challenge that probably one out of the last 5,000 deaths that have ever been brought to their office have ever posed, you know, an intricate staged suicide or, you know, some staged accidental death. Our deaths are plain and simple. They come generally from either truly, you know, difficult lifestyles, subsistence under very hazardous conditions, or they come from hopelessness and, you know, substance abuse, and those are fairly apparent as well. And so we've got a system right now where all of these bodies were coming in, and the problem was they got hit with that original form that was passed out to you that these families were ill-equipped to deal with. And unfortunately, it was culturally tone-deaf because, again, ME's thinking from their perspective, well, of course, everyone gets an embalming and you have a casket and you just go. What's the issue? And then we can just move it on, and we're actually doing something very graceful and kind. We're getting the family moving in the right direction. Well, unfortunately, in rural Alaska, the tradition is if someone has died and the state doesn't intercede and seize the body, they will take the body, they will wash it themselves, usually a person of the same gender. It's a custom, a culture, and you basically stage the body in the home of, you know, where they're going to, of their family. And then friends and family come, and they share food, and they talk about remembrances. And after 3 days, the body is buried. That's normal. That's the custom. And suddenly, they can't do that because the state has imposed an obligation to make sure a crime hasn't been committed. So they reach in, they pull the body out, take it away, and now what do? They get presented this form, and they're told to first elect a funeral home. And they're like, huh? Funeral home? Well, if you don't, then tell us who is going to pick up the body. When you tell me words like, I have to get somebody to pick up the body, I'm thinking, I can't send someone to Anchorage to pick up the body. Those words mean something different than take possession after we deliver it back to your home or back to the site of death. Words mean things, and these words were chosen in a way that didn't make sense to rural Alaskans. So they don't have someone to pick up the body. Now what do? They see language that says, gee, we really strongly urge you to use a funeral home. We're not going to do anything. We're not going to clean up the body, nothing. Well, that was an overstatement in the form because actually they are legally required currently to clean up the hands, the face, the neck, anything that gets cut on as a result of the autopsy. Then after that, it's you know, you're off to the races. You have no indication, disclosure of what the costs are. So the families, 99% of the time, they're signing the form thinking, okay, now that must be what I'm supposed to do. And what we heard from the Native families is, well, why did you do that? Why didn't you keep reading and look at all the details and see that you didn't really have to go the funeral home route? It was like we were just going with the flow. And what's the cost of that? This failure of communication has been huge sums of money that have been shifted not toward a system that isn't needed. These families don't want embalming. They don't need caskets. They just simply need those bodies sent back as quickly as possible once the ME is able to do their job. And so, you know, by the grace of Representative Herron and Olson, we're restoring the balance of the communication now so that we're ensuring that the forms are clear, what our social agencies are going to do. When we get a good form, and I know the ME's office will work with us, this is their first stab that you have up there. We haven't been able to review it and confirm it. We want to work with them to make sure language like pick up the body is changed to take delivery, you know, things like that. Once we get the language right, we're going to translate it into UPIC, and we're going to make sure other regions in the state make sure that this language is understandable. The folks that are going to handle the – what was the term, Representative Herron, for ABCP, for the people?
Navigators.
Navigators. Yeah, we're going to have navigators who can help be guidance to the family. And if we do that, the ME's office is going to be happy. We're going to be happy. There may be some funeral homes that are out some embalming fees and some casket fees. I'm sorry, but that cost shouldn't be placed on this system, on the back of these families. And it shouldn't be something the ME's office has to deal with either. So in terms of cleaning up, that's what this has done. This embalming required by law, I want to tick those 3 points that you mentioned, Representative Keller. The language said embalming required by law or by policy of the transporting entity. The reason we had talked about needing that language, and you heard it from Ray Bell, is there's a burden of convincing transit companies that it's no longer required by law. A little family in Queethluck is not going to be able to convince, you know, an air carrier that it's not required. The state of Alaska can. You know, the ME's office, I have confidence, will be able to convince them why it's not legally required if it's a confusion about that. But if we get in a situation where the state seizes the body, takes it away, and then the family signs off and says, send it back, and the ME's office turns around and says, well, you know what, we've got a conundrum because we've got some aviation companies now. To get it to you, they're requiring embalming. And our statutory authority only gives us authority to pay you the cost of transport and pay you the cost if the embalming is required by law. Technically, it's not required by law. Mm-hmm. So here's a check. Good luck with the rest of it. Mm-hmm. I know our ME's office wouldn't do that. In their hearts, they wouldn't be that inhumane. But they don't have statutory cover for that if that happens. And so the question is, we've got kind of a Bermuda Triangle now. What happens in that situation? Can the ME's office pick up the cost to embalm if we get a recalcitrant or a highly principled aviation company? It certainly shouldn't be borne by the family who never asked for that body be taken from them in the first place. So that's the conundrum about that language. It shouldn't cost anything. The state is in the best position to make sure it doesn't cost anything, but not the family.
Representative Seaton.
Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Davis. Trying to clear this up so mm-hmm. that there's not misunderstanding, would it make sense to, on line 3 there, to remove the words bylaw or, so that it would just read embalming required by a policy of a transporting entity?
Well, I think you still need bylaw because we don't know what the future holds. There could be some mass epidemic or something that that means bodies are dangerous unless they are embalmed. Essentially, we still need, if embalming is going to be required as a matter of law, once it's in the hands of the ME needs to pick that up, not the family. As long as the family, if once they have custody of the body, anything that's required to happen while they have the body, they need to pick up. What the family should incur are all the costs they would otherwise have incurred. And as Representative Herron indicated earlier to Representative Tarr's question, if the family's there and the person got killed up in Queethluck and they live in Accutac or they live in Napaskiak or something, they're going to have to pay to move the body anyway. So that's a cost they're going to incur. But anything extra that happens because the state is doing the business of the state needs to be picked up by the state. And so required by law, I think, still needs to be there for that purpose.
Okay. Follow-up?
Yeah, follow-up. I guess as we think about this, I would like to get beyond the point of having transporting agencies think, because of the wording required by law is in there, that somehow they need to require it because it's required by law. So that's where I'm trying. I mean, the technical language I can understand, but I think that we need some clarification so that we don't either have state troopers or transportation people thinking, oh, well, we should do this because it's required by law. And so that's what I'm getting at.
What you're addressing is the inherent ambiguity of the current existing language, and that could be corrected by saying embalming if required by law. I mean, that's what that means, embalming if it's required by law, and that's how the Emmys interpreted it and everyone else has. It's just we've got those outliers who maybe, you know, are reading it in a different way.
Representative Keller?
You said your counsel.
Yes.
Yeah. So legal language has always been a mystery to me. Webster's is so much better.
Right. Exactly.
So you understand better. But what I wanted to say is I just want to confirm that you do see our problem, right? Is that if we expand the risk so that an air carrier is making the determination actually in the end here or what we spend, we have to get, you know, have to do some clarification somehow.
And to be honest, you know, we could strike that language or by a policy of the transporting entity if it's fully understood by the Emmy's office and by the state that that body is theirs and it's their custody, it's their problem till they get it home. And so if they encounter a situation where an airline has changed a policy or created a problem, that is part of their burden of the transportation back. And so I don't think we're not trying to give control or create a cost for the ME, but we want an acknowledgement. Because this is written in terms of cost as opposed to duty, we want to make sure that those are kind of coextensive in this instance, because no family should be left figuring out how to get a body back. They should never be in that situation. On the cosmetology, I just want to mention that the question of cost on that, Representative Keller, the current law states that cosmetology is only required to make the head, face, neck, and hands presentable if those parts are disfigured by the post-mortem examination. So addressing, you know, Ray Bell's concern, you know, if there's a death by shotgun, you know, and it's to the head or something, that's not a cosmetology requirement that's currently placed on the ME, and it certainly isn't something that the family would have done if they were there and the state hadn't interceded. So essentially what we're talking about would be only where the postmortem exam itself has created a problem with the appearance of the body. And I think the ME's concern in their fiscal note that, well, if we have, you know, parties in the rural areas doing some of our work for us, then, you know, what's the level of cleanup? My sense right now, and I guess I want to address that, is the way this bill is written, it gives the ME's office latitude to stepwise itself into using the technology, because the qualifier is the state medical examiner shall designate a location if a facility with adequate technology and personnel is available. So in the ME's judgment, they're going to work through their understanding and knowledge of what's available locally, and what is adequate will be different on a case-by-case basis. So depending upon the circumstances, technology may or may not be adequate depending upon what the circumstances present. If it involves toxicology, if it involves, you know, issues of hypothermia or determination or some things like that, I'm sure the ME has certain criteria and they can make a judgment whether the facilities are adequate. And then the feedback to the agencies in the region will be, gee, if we only had a little this or a little that, we'd be able to handle these next kinds of cases. And that will evolve over time. It will be an evolution. So in terms of cosmetology, I would highly doubt that after this bill is passed, we're immediately going to go into a world where people are doing full-on autopsies out in the region. That's not going to happen. So I don't really see a cosmetology issue presenting in the near future until the agencies work out their relationships a little better. And finally, on the temperature control, just what we're hearing from the region is that the ME's office does a great job in terms of doing the freezing, some dry ice, and those have been generally adequate except for those rare times in the summer when, you know, fish freight and everything and there's a screw up or somebody forgot there was a body in a warehouse or something. So, and those are going to happen regardless of the best efforts of the parties. And it's not really anything that would fall on the side of the ME.
Just a quick clarification question, if I could, Mr. Chair. On the cosmetology, where were you reading? Is that in the bill, or is that in a section on the bill?
That's the current law, and it's at the page of top of page 2, and it's between lines 5 and 7.
I don't see anything there about if.
If. It's right there. Cosmetology necessary to make the head, face, neck, and hands of the deceased presentable if those parts of the body are disfigured by the post-mortem examination.
Yeah, and I thought you said it was also if the technology.
Oh, and then dropping down to that, if you look at line 9,
that's what
state medical examiner, yes. And then part 1 is a facility with adequate technology and personnel available.
Thank you.
Representative Seaton.
Mr. Chairman, just to get on the record then, so your interpretation of this is that the department shall provide for temperature or other controls would include proper dry ice in the transport, so that it's not saying we're going to have a temperature control coffin.
No.
This is just providing that the body is frozen in dry ice or whatever that
The current practices. Yes, sir. In talking with the ME's office, they are good people. They're trying to do the right thing. And when they, in those rare instances when someone persisted and managed to say, no, I want the body going straight back, no embalming, no nothing, they did make these efforts to, they have the facility to freeze the body, to add dry ice, and that's what they're currently doing and when it's called for. And we appreciate that, and that's all we're trying to make sure. And to some extent, the sense I got in talking with the ME's was a discomfort on their part when they were stepping outside the boundaries of what the state law strictly required. But they're human, they're kind, and they were doing things beyond the call of the statute. And so some of these provisions you'll find that Representative Herron has put in here are to give the ME the cover and the right to continue to do those things.
Representative Tark.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Because we only have M1 medical examiner in Anchorage, could this problem be mitigated by having another location in Fairbanks or somewhere that was farther north or perhaps closer to some of our rural communities, at least by some hundreds of miles?
Yeah. It's my understanding the ME's office does have a satellite office in Fairbanks, and so they're able to take some of the load there. Uh-huh. I do think that over time, as we look at the caseload, and I think what will be a nice evolution of this relationship between the ME's office and the local health care providers is we will be able to sort of monitor and stepwise our way into something that might evolve into a natural relationship where we can get maybe, in Kotzebue or in Bethel, a regional center or office that has, sub-professionals and growing into a more professional stature. But it's a way to do it slowly, cautiously, and consonant with the technology needs and requirements of the ME's office.
Mr. Chairman, just brief follow-up.
Follow-up.
But we do only have one medical examiner for this
correct.
State.
Correct. That is correct.
Is there a standard for that? Because I've always been surprised. It seems like a big job for 700 and some thousand people.
It's amazing. It's absolutely amazing that one individual, the ME, can handle that. But I think it's pretty standard across other states where they'll have an individual be other than highly populated states.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the ME's office, hopefully they'll feel comfortable to come forward, to get more lieutenants and other folks, because we don't want to wear them out. We don't want to burn out our one ME.
Yeah. Okay.
Any other questions?
Nope.
Thank you. Let's take a quick an at ease. Order again, Representative Herron. I after listening to the bill, I think I can speak for the committee that this is an important issue, and obviously we've almost spent 2 hours on it, because this is an emotional issue and it's an important issue too, and we have to get it right. The consensus of the committee would be is that we'd like to hold it over, and maybe we can tune it up a little bit. And bring it back before the committee again. So I'm going to hold public testimony over, and at this time we'll just hold the bill over. So thank you. And then for the public, we did have two presentations today, but unfortunately we're down to our last 15 minutes, and so it's rare that we have to counsel on you. because I don't believe we have enough time for their presentations, and we normally don't do this. And we could try to get you.
Mr. Chairman, just because I'd worked with Ms. Ramsey before, she may only be in town today. I don't know if that's.
But we don't meet again until Thursday. I mean, this doesn't happen very often. And I appreciate your patience with our committee. You know, sometimes topics take us longer to vet through. And this is an important topic. And, you know, we have to get it right. And so don't be too mad at us. Okay? And we will definitely get you back, everybody, like that. So with that, our next committee meeting will be on Tuesday, February the 25th. And we'll take up HB 214, and we may take up another bill, too. And I will adjourn, and it's going to be 4:45, I guess. 4:45. Thank you.